I call this meeting of the Senate Community and Regional Affairs to order. For the record, it's 3:30 p.m. on Tuesday, February 26, 2019. We're in the Belts Room of the Tom Stewart Building. We have a quorum to do business. Present today are Senators Gray Jackson, welcome, Senator Hoffman, myself, Senator Bishop, Senator Birch, and Senator Costello. Good afternoon, everybody. I'd like to recognize our staff, Christopher Dickrell on Senate Records, Eileen Time from the LIO, and Cody Grusendorf, the third generation Grusendorf to work in the building, now committee aide to me, and a blessing to have on staff. So I'd like to remind folks on the cell phones, we all know the drill on that. And if it goes off, we got our favorite charity you'll donate to. So today we have one item on the agenda. It's the 2020 census presentation by Lori Wolf, President and CEO of the 4-Acre Group. Welcome. Eddie Hunsinger, old Department of Labor Employee Research and Analysis. Welcome. Katie Skovic, Cook Inlet Housing Authority. Welcome. There's no public testimony today. It's invited testimony only. And I have just a few quick facts, and we're going to kick off here, and they're going to reiterate it. But it was interesting. I was Commissioner of Labor 12, 13 years ago when we kicked off the decennial census in 2010 in Norvik, and I was there to help kick that off. And it's an important event, as we're going to learn. Clifford Jackson was the first person counted in Norvik, and it is of the utmost importance that we get this count accurate and not have an undercount. That's our goal, is to be counted correctly. And I'm not going to steal any more thunder from our presenters, but please take it away. So we're all here. And Lori, are you kicking off? Katie's kicking off first. Okay, Katie, kick her off, and let's see what you got.
Well, thank you, Senator Bishop, and all the members of the committee for having us here today to talk about the importance of a fair and accurate count, especially here in Alaska in 2020. My name is Katie Skovic. I am the Senior Policy Analyst at Cook Inlet Housing Authority and a member of the Alaska Census Working Group, which is propped up by the 4-Acre Group. And the mission of that group is pretty simple, and it's just to make sure that every Alaskan is counted in the 2020 census. I'm just going to give a basic lay of the land, why the census matters, why Alaska is at risk of undercount, and what's at stake if Alaskans are undercounted in 2020. So when we talk about reasons to care about the census, I think this 3.2 billion number is one that stands out, and that's the amount of annual federal funding allocations that come into Alaska that are based on census data. And over 70 federal programs benefiting Alaskans. The funding for those are based on census data, and those include anything from highway planning and construction to Title I grants, special education grants, Medicaid, housing, foster care, sort of all of the main systems that our state relies on are based on federal data and federal census data. And I think in light of state and local budget constraints, it's especially critical that Alaska receive its fair share of that federal funding. I think it's also important to note that since the census is only conducted once every 10 years, an inaccurate count in 2020 isn't just insufficient federal funding for 1 year, it's not receiving our fair share of federal funding for a 10-year period.
And members, feel free to ask questions at the end of the slide deck right before we move on. Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So it's $3.2 billion annually that we stand to lose if we don't do this right.
Yes, correct. And so you spread that off across 10 years.
Right,
and that's,
right.
Yeah,
that's
a lot of money at stake.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're welcome. Please continue.
And so in addition to the importance of federal funding allocations, census data also play a pretty critical role in allowing organizations across the state to have the data they need to confidently invest and make decisions in our state. And so Alaska Airlines is a member of the working group. And we have a quote here from Tim Thompson who says, that private sector businesses rely on accurate Census Bureau data to help us determine how and when to invest in the many Alaskan communities we serve. The more accurate the data is, the more confident we are when making those investments. And so organizations across the state, from governments, tribes, nonprofits, for-profit businesses, rely on this data to be confident in investing in our state. So it's not only about receiving federal funding, it's also about sort of the business climate we have. If Alaska Airlines or the local grocery store, whoever it may be, has the data to be confident in investing in Alaska. So without an accurate count, our state loses out, but getting an accurate count in Alaska is extremely difficult. And it's not all that surprising. We're talking about a process designed hundreds of years ago to count a population that was 1% of the country's population today in a sort of East Coast area not much bigger than the size of Alaska today. And so it's hard to imagine that the framers were thinking about Tuktsuk Bay, Alaska, when they mandated the first census, and yet that's where the census will begin in January of 2020.
For my committee members, there's been a couple of additional slides that'll be forthcoming that we'll add in, and this is one of them. So thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
No.
Well, I can't blame us, thank you.
Yeah.
And so the 2020 count begins early in Alaska for reasons that won't be surprising to all of you on the committee, but there are the realities of counting remote and rural areas of the state, both accessing those areas and also being able to count populations that work and migrate seasonally. And so I think we do have to credit the Census Bureau for their engagement in working with the working group to identify and make sure that the enumeration methods are matching the people and the places they're intended to count. But in our work, we know that there's still a lot to be done. So there are numerous threats to an accurate count in Alaska, one of those being, again, geographic barriers. One of the most important things we think is that if a person's first contact with the Census Bureau is on the date of enumeration, we think that's too late. We need to be communicating with people, letting them know that the census is happening, why it's important to participate before then. And so in 2010, there was a P.O. box mailer to those in remote communities who don't receive mail at their normal at-home address, and that won't be conducted in 2020. And so there's some elements like that where there'll be fewer federal resources available in that communications and outreach period, especially to remote areas. There are also language barriers. Census forms will be translated into 12 non-English languages, none of which are Alaska Native languages. And so we know that that presents a serious challenge in our state as well.
Could you repeat that again?
Sure. So census forms will be translated into 12 non-English languages, none of which are Alaska Native languages. And so at the working group and across the state, we're trying to work through how on our own we could sort of figure out translation and get that done, but it's not going to be through sort of the normal federal process of translating and disseminating those materials.
Senator Birch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is great. A question I had the last time the census, we had a precursor last year, I believe it was, on how do you count or do you count, for lack of a better term, illegal aliens, people that are here that are, you know, either overstayed their passport or other their permission to be here. Or people that, you know, just kind of came across the border one way or the other, are they counted? And if so, how do you count them? And I assume that they're probably heading the other direction rather than being counted. But I just don't know how that works. And maybe that's not as big an issue it is in Alaska as it is in other states. But I just was curious as to how you reconcile that for people that, you know, are kind of, you know, in the gray areas there.
Sure, and through the chair, the census is, and Mr. Hunsinger would likely be able to speak to this better than I would, but the census is intended to count those residing in the country and not to count necessarily citizens of the country. And so it is intended to count people that are currently living in the country in 2020. I can look into that further, and also I'm sure that, again, Mr. Hunsinger would be able to speak to that in more detail.
You have a comment on that, Eddie?
Yes, Senator, through the chair. So the Census Bureau uses usual place of residence concept, and so they're going to count everyone. They want to count everyone at their usual place of residence at their housing unit, whether citizen or non-citizen. They won't be. There may be a question for that on the census form. There is on the American Community Survey form, but the main thing that the Census Bureau is interested in is usual place of residence and counting every single person. So even people who are visiting for long-term work from overseas, if their usual place of residence on census day is in Alaska, then they'll be counted in Alaska.
Senator Gray Jackson.
Well, I just had a quick follow-up. And to the extent that, you know, you got apportionment at a statewide level, but at a national level, seats in Congress are basically attributed to, we don't really hit the threshold there. I think it's over about a million and a quarter per, you know, the number of members of Congress there are. So it doesn't really affect us one way or the other as far as whether we'd be entitled to a second congressional seat. But that also goes into the count then, those people that are here, you know, whether they're here legal or not, the fact that they're residing here, that goes into the count?
Through the chair, I can't recall the specifics for the congressional reapportionment, but they do make tabulations that different states may need or want for things like a place of residence for folks who are in military or for a lot of different special populations. But I'm not sure what sort of the rules are for the congressional reapportionment part.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So the forms are going to be translated into 12 different languages. So can you tell me why none of them are Alaska Native languages?
Through the chair, I would need to look up the threshold. There is a minimum threshold for number of people speaking the language, and I believe that no Alaska Native language met that minimum threshold. And so, I mean, if you think about the number of languages spoken across the state, it's not only Alaska Native languages, but there's something like 100 languages spoke in the Anchorage School District. And so concerns about not just Alaska Native languages, but maybe up to 100 languages that those forms will not be translated into.
If I can follow up, Mr. Chairman, I understand exactly what you're saying, but this is Alaska and Alaska Native languages, and that's a concern for me. And so if I can follow up again, Mr. Chairman, so I heard you say that there's going to be effort into translating. How much effort?
I think there's effort and there are resources, and so we're putting effort in terms of the budget that we have outlines translation and also local sub-grants to local communities as well, sort of the idea being that people in local areas know their communities best. But that requires resources to pay translators to do that work. And so part of our work is around advocating for the importance of translation, and the other part is for identifying those resources that will allow us to do that.
Thank you for your effort. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I'd just like to say one thing. We don't have our federal counterpart at the table with us today. We weren't able to pull it off to get approval for that person to be here, but I look to do one more follow-up meeting with the committee a little further in the year, and we'll have our federal counterpart here to help answer some of these other questions. Thank you. Please continue.
So in addition to language barriers that we just talked about, there are barriers to connectivity. The 2020 census will be the first to push online responses. That won't be the case in all areas of Alaska, but it is something to consider when you think about just broadband connectivity across the state. And then there are also numerous hard-to-count populations that are historically undercounted that are prevalent in Alaska that I will get into in a little more detail. To highlight how hard to count our state is, I think it helps to first look at the rest of the country. And so this is a map of the lower 48. And the big takeaways here are that any areas that are colored in white here had above average response rates to the 2010 census. And these are sort of business as usual census tracts as far as the Census Bureau considers them. Areas that are shaded in from yellow to orange to red are considered hard to count areas. Those are areas that had low response rates in 2010 and required additional, more expensive follow-up. And so these areas are more likely to be undercounted. So the big takeaway here is that for most of the lower 48, you have large swaths of these sort of white business as usual census tracts. When we turn to Alaska, the map looks a little different. And I think one of the important things here is that these striped areas up to the north and west are called special enumeration tracts. And these are tracts that are so difficult to count that they require special counting methods. And so really, when you look at this map, you could picture those striped areas as an even darker shade of red. And so when you think about that image in comparison to the rest of the country, most geographic areas of Alaska are considered hard to count. We also know that there are specific groups or populations that are at risk of undercount. So those areas that appeared with the striped lines across them, those special enumeration tracts, were undercounted by an estimated 8% in 2010. and that makes up sort of most of the geographic area of the state. We also know that there is a 4.9% undercount of American Indians and Alaska Natives in non-urban areas in the 2010 census, and so that's clearly a concern in our state as well. Other groups at risk of undercount include children under the age of five, immigrants, renters, individuals experiencing homelessness, those living in overcrowded housing settings. And so there's a list of groups that are especially at risk. And when we think about that list, it's pretty clear that this is a statewide issue across Alaska.
Senator Birch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. How do you know? I mean, obviously, if you have an undercount at some point in time after the count, I guess, you know, somebody said, whoops, we missed 8% of the people here. How do you do the subsequent count to determine you missed people in the first count? Through the chair.
Sure. Through the chair. The Census Bureau post has sort of like a post-mortem after the census is conducted where they go back and look at their counts and they compare, so they'll compare the 2020 count to the 2010 count and use, and again, Mr. Hunsinger would be able to speak to sort of the statistical process of that in more detail, but those numbers come directly from the Census Bureau. So they'll come out and say this number of we undercounted special enumeration tracts in Alaska by an estimated 8%, and this is in their sort of biopsy post-census report that they put out, and they overcounted this group, they undercounted this group, and so that's how we get to those.
Okay, fair enough. Thank you.
And if you're the Commissioner of Labor, you hear about it from a borough mayor that says, how come we got undercounted and we got, you said 89,000 and we got 92. Am I right, Eddie?
Yes, yes, Senator.
So then just to walk.
Excuse me, Senator Costello, I'm sorry.
Thank you. Thank you for your presentation. We had you guys around last year for the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. I'm reading a little bit ahead, and I'm reading about Census Day. Is the counting actually occurring on one day? To me, that doesn't seem that it could be possible, but it's talked about in the material.
Sure. Through the chair, there's Census Day. There are sort of a phased approach that leads up to that. So the count will begin in Alaska starting in January. I believe in-person counting will actually begin in March. And then I think Census Day is a bit more of a ceremonial day in which the counting starts. And I don't know if that's when the internet forms will actually be sent out. But there are some of the more difficult counting or enumeration methods start earlier than that April day.
And is there ever a problem with fraud? You know, I'm not thinking of in Alaska, but like anywhere in the country where states are angling to get, you know, more representation in Congress or what have you. I mean, has fraud ever been an issue?
Through the chair, I would need to look into that. From our work at the working group and coordinating with other states, the message across states has very much been just to get that accurate count, to get the right number, and that's very much what we're focused on. I would need to look into the question of fraud to have a better answer for you.
One final question. If you know the percentage of the population that's undercounted, why can't the number just be increased by that percentage, assuming that that same number of people are not counted?
Through the chair, and that, unfortunately, not having the representative from the Census Bureau today, I think would be much in a better position to answer that question. The census is constitutionally mandated to occur once every 10 years, and I think questions of changing those or adjusting those numbers afterwards would be probably best addressed to a representative from the Bureau.
Please continue.
Great. So I was going to just walk through a couple examples. Senator Bishop, here is your district. And just to highlight that this district includes both sort of the white above average response rate districts. It also includes these hard to count areas marked in yellow and orange and red, as well as these special enumeration tracts that require special in-person counting methods. And so the estimates here are that 22% of this district live in hard to count areas, those orange, yellow, red areas that are more likely to be undercounted, and that 26% live in special enumeration tracts and so will be counted using these distinct in-person counting methods. And then also just to zoom into this one tract in the dark red area there, this is a tract that had a 28.6 response rate to the census in 2010, which is one of the lowest response rates in the country in the 2010 census. And so I think just looking at this, highlighting the complexity of even within one district, you'll have multiple different counting methods. You have extremely hard to reach populations that will be counted in different ways. And so just highlighting just how much of a challenge this is in our state.
That's on a road system. And a district that's on the road system.
Yes, exactly.
Just to emphasize your...
Yes, no, thank you.
...challenge that when you go to north of the Yukon River, how hard it can be, you know?
Exactly. And so looking at another district, Senate District S, this one is interesting in that 100% of this district is considered hard to count. So 47% of the population lives in these hard to count areas. You see down in the Aleutians, these red marked areas. And then 53%, the remaining majority, live in special enumeration tracts that are especially difficult to reach, will require those sort of more costly in-person, on-the-ground counting methods. And so just to reiterate that those tracts in 2010 were undercounted by 8%. And I also wanted to highlight that this isn't just a rural or a remote rural issue. That's also very much an urban issue. Here is highlighted District I, and that district has an estimated 63% of the district live in hard-to-count areas that are at risk of being undercounted. Districts K and M have populations of 28% and 14% that live in hard-to-count areas. I think one thing to stress here is, A, that this is not just a remote rural Alaska issue, that even our urban areas are difficult to count. And I think also highlighting that in Alaska, the process of non-response follow-up, so after the census tries to go out and count someone the first time, if they are unable to reach them, they can make additional efforts to count someone. And that process in Alaska is more costly, more difficult. And so especially in our state, ensuring that when the census first reaches out to someone, that they are aware of the census and participate then is important, because it becomes more and more difficult in our state to reach someone after that.
Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I'm a little puzzled, unless I missed something, okay? Because I'm District I, and I walked District I, knocked on doors. Didn't seem that hard to me. So, I mean, 63% of the people live in hard to count areas. It just didn't, and I don't know what I'm missing, and I find that hard to understand. I really do. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Could I say something? And I just want to throw this maybe myth bust a little bit. There are people that don't mind not opening the door when you're campaigning, but when a census worker comes to the door, it might be another question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I recognize that and I appreciate that, but when you talk about hard to count areas, I've just, anyway.
Through the chair, I think this is actually an important distinction to make, and I think I could have done a better job explaining that, that when I talk about, or when the phrase hard to count is used, it's really just in reference to what was the response rate in 2010. And so if that was hard to count in this instance means sort of in the bottom 20% of response rates to the census in 2010, and so it's sort of to your point, Senator Bishop, that whether someone responds to the census is maybe different from whether you know where they live. And so I think this number is just trying to capture the difficulty of getting people to respond to the census in those areas.
If I can follow up, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
No, I really appreciate your comments, Mr. Chairman. I also appreciate your comments, too, because now I have a better understanding of exactly what you mean when you say hard to count. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mm-hmm. Please continue. Mr. Chairman. Senator Hoffman.
Do we have a census form that needs to be filled out?
I don't think we have one in our package.
Yeah,
Mr. Chair.
Senator Costello.
Thank you. And my question is very similar to my colleague at the other end of the table. My district apparently has 28%. Difficult, you know, being counted, difficulty. And I, too, can walk very easily to every single door and apartment in the district. So I'm curious about how, like, what technology is used. I mean, if I go door to door and I have an app and I knock on the door and someone's not home, I can indicate that I need to go back, and then I just keep going back until I find them home. Is that what you are, you know, the census people are using? Are they using some kind of electronic application that that they can share with others maybe when somebody goes and tries again?
Through the chair, I think that speaks to sort of the mammoth operation that the census is in terms of, I think, maybe a distinction to be made between local canvassing and some of these districts. So your district, for instance, likely receives much of those will be either online response or by mail. And so in that case, it's less about knowing where someone lives and more about whether they're actually completing that form and returning it. And so your district as a whole had an above average response rate. So it's not as a whole considered sort of one of the hardest areas to count in the state or in the country, but just acknowledging that there are tracks within that district where the response rate was lower, and then that then requires more follow-up. And Mr. Hunsinger might have more to add to that as well.
Yes, through the chair, I'll have more information on that in my slides.
Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I really appreciate the follow-up questions from my colleague at the other end. And so my question is, and this is the last question I'm going to have on this subject, I promise. How do you handle apartments? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Through the chair, as far as I know, I would need to look into this further. And also, again, our state demographer will have the best details. But apartments are, I believe, considered housing units as a house would be, as a townhouse would be. And so those are considered housing units, and people will be counted at their local address. And so people will be counted in their apartment unit. And that's what, if that's where they receive mail, that's where they'll also receive their census form.
Thank you.
Please continue.
So I think hopefully you've conveyed some of the message of why Alaska, or just the fact that Alaska is difficult to count. I think another element of this is that we saw undercounts of Alaska in 2010, and the 2020 census will need to count more people with even fewer federal resources. And so there's been a slow ramp up of federal funding. When you look at sort of a graph of federal funding for the census, you usually see, and if you talk to people who work on the census, they'll say that the census isn't a one-year operation, it's a 10-year operation. And so you see a relatively flat funding level to begin with, and then that ramps up pretty quickly in the 3-4 years leading up to the census. That ramp up didn't happen at the federal level in the same way that it happened in previous censuses. And so just in terms of sort of raw federal allocations, there's been less to work with. There are also fewer partnership program staff have been hired than national advocates have called for. Those are staff that are out in communities working to form complete count committees with local governments or with local organizations that can then sort of spread the word about the census. They're making connections with tribes or with local libraries or whatever the case may be to sort of engage local networks. And so there are fewer of those staff expected to be hired than advocates have called for. This third point is important in that communications materials coming directly from the census won't be ready until late 2019. And so, as I mentioned before, what you don't want is for someone to first hear about the census when an enumerator shows up on their door. You want them to have heard about the census either from a neighbor or a friend, or they've heard about it at the local library or whatever the case may be. You want people to be aware about it and know that it's important before they're ready to be counted. And those census materials at the federal level won't be ready until late 2019, and they won't be translated again into Alaska Native languages or many of the languages spoken across the state. And so that's a serious concern, especially when you think about the census starting even earlier in Alaska. I also just wanted to highlight that I think it's also important to acknowledge that states across the country are allocating resources to fill gaps. And so as the working group, I mentioned before that we see both sort of an advocacy role of just spreading the word about how important the census is, also identifying resources to fill some of those gaps at the federal level. And much of that has been done through just sort of in-kind donations by nonprofits that are engaged in this work. I think it's important to acknowledge that this isn't sort of a red state or a blue state issue, but that across the country you've seen states ranging from, I mean, I don't know that Alaska ever really likes to be compared to a state like California, but California allocating $100 million at the state level towards their census advocacy. And then smaller efforts in Arizona, $5 million, in Georgia, a little over $2 million. And that's of direct state allocation to sort of fill those federal funding gaps. And so just acknowledging, I think we see a role of just sort of like an all hands on deck effort to make sure that Alaska is counted accurately.
Senator Birch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We always talk about the count, which indicates it's we're just counting noses. But from my recollection, there are some incredibly detailed questionnaires that are affiliated, maybe not with every single person that's I can't remember if it goes to every person or every 10th person or every so often.
But I seem to remember some incredibly detailed questionnaires that would, you know, you sit down and take a long time to fill out. So I was curious as to how much, you know, who prescribes, you know, we're going to be diving out down into, you know, 50 questions here and this level of detail. When that's available publicly, it seems to me like they sit on it for so many years and then it's all out there. And then lastly, there are no secrets anymore. I mean, you know, you got, you know, the internet and, you know, I mean, you can probably Google up anybody in this room and find out, a 50 pages on whatever's ever happened in their life. But so I guess so first of all, how detailed are the questions? What other resources are available to fill in the blanks on those questions as far as, you know, just media that's out there? And then lastly, how long is that secure or, you know, secreted away, if you will, through the chair?
Through the chair. So I believe the census form, I think there's a distinction between the census and the American Community Survey, which is an annual survey conducted with not the whole country, but a pretty large subsample of the country, and that's a more extensive form. I believe the census form itself is 10 questions. It's a relatively short, they try to keep that very compact to increase engagement in that. And so you'll have a lot of funding formulas will rely on both census data and American Community Survey data, but the census form itself is pretty short. In terms of your question about the timeline, I believe that census data is released, and I would probably need to look this up to confirm, but in late 2020 or early 2021, is that?
It'll, through the chair, the initial numbers are delivered to the president, I believe, right at the turn of 2021, and then they start rolling out more detailed products throughout the next couple of years. And I'll note on the American Community Survey, there's that and many other surveys, and I'll speak to that a little bit in my slides as well. And that's one reason. So one reason that we know the undercount is from survey-based methods, and there's uncertainty in surveys, and that's I think part of the reason that we can't just readily adjust the counts to when the Census Bureau through their sort of research has identified there's an undercount for a population. That's based on post-enumeration survey sort of sampling methods, and it's not readily possible to take that and just update a local population estimate from it. There are count question resolution programs. There's ways that communities can respond to the Census Bureau and let them know they were undercounted, but they are very challenging to do. It's very difficult to get an update that way, to get a revision to the census that way.
Senator Costello?
Just to follow up, I thought they released, like in the Civil War, you could go back and look, you know, like 100 years for, you know, ago, you could go back and find that, you know, George had, you know, three kids and whatever. I mean, that whatever that census data that was filled in, I mean, a long time ago, but I can't remember what that time frame was.
Yes, through the chair, that's 72 years, so the latest data is 1940. So
okay.
At some point, record level data and information is available, but it's 72 years later.
72. Okay.
Before we go to Senator Costello, Mr. Hunsinger, you and Ms. Wolf, would you go ahead and put yourselves on the record, because this dialogue, I'm kind of a free-flowing guy, and if either one of you want to jump in just for our record keepers here. So go ahead and introduce yourself for the record.
My name is Eddie Hunsinger. I work with the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development in the Research Analysis section. I'm the state demographer there.
And I'm Lori Wolf. I'm the president and CEO of the 4-Acre Group, and we serve as Alaska's nonprofit association and capacity builder, and we are standing up the Alaska Census Working Group.
Thank you. Senator Costello.
Thank you. I find this question of counting everybody kind of fascinating, and I'm just curious, and maybe you're not the ones to ask, but are there groups of people working on another way to do it other than physically reaching out to people and having them agree to be counted? I mean, I'm sitting here thinking, you know, between all the different ways individuals connect with an organization, perhaps, you know, through taxes, with their local taxes, or the permanent fund dividend, or, you know, birth and death, you know, registries, all of these things. Do you happen to know, is anyone working on a better way to estimate without having to go through the tremendous expense to actually go out and reach all of the people in our country?
Yes. Through the chair, yes, there are people in our country and also in other countries who are working on administrative records-based enumerations and things like this. There are biases in administrative record data where some people have higher coverage than others, and so it's a real challenge to bring those together, but certainly at statistical conferences and things like this, it's definitely something that's been talked about just in the last couple of years, but really for decades, and it's a goal, I think, for a lot of folks to have to use administrative records to count people in the future.
Please continue.
Great, and so this is just to summarize sort of my portion of this, just to highlight some of the effects of an undercount in our state. And so once again, to point to that sort of $3.2 billion number, that reduced federal funding compounds state and local budget gaps, and those are pretty critical programs, reduction in services like road repairs, education, 70 federal programs in Alaska, and so that data is important. It's also important to, again, just for organizations across the state to be able to plan and invest in communities. Census data is also used for the proper enforcement of laws that protect vulnerable populations, the Voting Rights Act, things like that. And so I think just to end my portion, I think in working on the census, even for someone who's work spends a lot of time thinking about the census, it's easy for the census to be thought of as sort of an impersonal operation, and census data can seem sort of bland or something that's more interesting to statisticians than useful to the rest of us. And I think the reality is that census data will determine what our state looks like in terms of our roads and our schools. And so if we care about those things, I think it's sort of necessary to care about the census. And I think also just to highlight that I think the good news is that we can reduce the risk of an undercount if we collectively act and if we identify the ways in which we're at risk of an undercount and then are able to allocate some of the resources we need to combat that. And so thank you for your work and for having us here today, and looking forward to more questions.
And I just want to put another point on it at your close is, you know, you think it's the big brother coming out to count and want to know where you live, but you've put a face on this, right? Just look at your partners. I mean, Alaska Airlines, why do they care? Well, they want to know, do we need to add another flight out of Kotzebue or into Bethel or out of Juneau, or does Costco need to expand in this area of town, or those types of things? And that's not federal government. That's just private enterprise, private business that's bringing jobs and adding to our economy. So thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
who's up now? Eddie, are you next?
Yes.
Okay. And I apologize. Okay, members, there's the last document you got passed out to you. We put that in our book. That's the latest and greatest slides. And your slides didn't change, did they?
Okay. No, Senator.
All right, good.
So, addressing the committee through the chair, good afternoon, and thank you for inviting me to talk about the 2020 census today. My name is Eddie Hunsinger again. I'm state demographer over at the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development. I work with colleagues on population estimates and projections for the state, and also participate in Census Bureau partnership programs to help ensure accurate and useful data for Alaska from the U.S. Census Bureau. Census Bureau has a lot of these partnership programs. So the decennial U.S. Census is the most important data set that we have to generate statistics about population. It, in addition to its constitutional mandate for reapportionment, it's the starting point for virtually all state and local population estimates in the country. And these estimates are used for funding allocations and in the development of countless reports and statistics each year. The Senator mentioned, Senator Birch mentioned American Community Survey earlier. Decennial census data goes into the population estimates, which form the sort of weights and controls for the American Community Survey data. So without the American Community, without the census, we don't get a reliable American Community Survey. And I should note the U.S. Census Bureau manages many different surveys, many of which are ongoing. The American Community Survey is an ongoing one that that we talk about a lot, that we utilize a lot because it has that detailed information. But when we talk about the census, we mean the decennial count of the entire population. The questionnaire for the decennial census, it's pretty brief, but the questionnaires, the challenge here is that they must be filled in for every single household and living quarters in the country. And each of those households and living quarters must be tied to a certain place. This is a huge undertaking. The last census was in 2010, and the next will be right around the corner in 2020. So I have about 15 minutes of information prepared, and I'll cover I'll talk about preparations for the 2020 census and how the census will work, and next I'll share information from the Census Bureau on data privacy, and also some sort of concerns that we have as we go forward about different areas of concern for counting everyone in Alaska. So my first slide here is some different data resources that rely on decennial census data. We don't think about it very much, of course, but because all of our population estimates through the decades start with the census, countless other statistics are affected by it. They're used directly in the development of health statistics, education statistics, and these are Alaska data. Employment statistics are monthly unemployment rates, crime statistics. They're used in planning and forecast tools for transportation. They're used in housing statistics. In my experience, few socioeconomic data resources don't go back to a starting point with the decennial census. There are some, but they're not many. And for small communities, when we have hundreds in Alaska, of course, the decennial census is often the most reliable source of demographic and household characteristics. It's often the only resource for reliable demographic and household characteristics. When someone calls me to ask for data by age or by race for a small village in Alaska, I note the decennial census back in 2010 as the preferred place to start, if it's possible. Noting its timing, and we are several years from that last census, for many cases, it is still the most reliable source. There's American Community Survey data, and that covers every community, but due to that small sample size, and the data for small communities is often unreliable. Since decennial data should represent a 100% count, they don't have the kinds of uncertainty that comes with other sources like the American Community Survey, and that especially affects small populations. I want to note here, though, it's very difficult, we talked a bit earlier, to correct or know how to correct errors for these specific places in the decennial census. So it's especially important that the Census Bureau get the counts right for us in 2020 and working with us. People sometimes ask me about PFD-based data for population. PFD-based data is helpful for population estimates. Indeed, it's the only way that we can get reliable yearly total population estimates for many of our small communities, but it doesn't cover everyone, and we must use it in conjunction with the decennial census to get complete population estimates for the communities. It's really a partnership of the data. So I'm going to shift gears now to provide some information on how and when the census will happen in Alaska. This is all based on Census Bureau materials and information from partnership program interactions with the Census Bureau. There are several ways that people will be counted in the census. The four major ways that people living in households will be counted in the 2020 census are, first, self-response. These are colored violet in the map. Now, this map is a little bit deceptive for Alaska because the violet in the map, it covers Anchorage. It covers the bowl in Anchorage. It covers up in Fairbanks in the city around Fort Wainwright all the way west to College. It covers Juneau, where we're sitting now, is all the self-response areas. And these are used to be called mail-out, mail-back. For self-response areas, materials will be mailed to the housing unit for response by internet or mail or by telephone. If there is no response, the Census Bureau will follow up. This is called non-response follow-up. That's very costly. They'll do that to verify or get a response. Self-response areas must cover most of the United States, and this does include many Alaskans, but if they have to do that non-response follow-up, if people don't respond to the materials that they get in the mail, whether by phone or internet or email, and they have to go out physically, that costs a lot of money. And if they have to do it repeatedly, the person may not get counted. So that's a big concern that we have. Second is update leave. These are the tan-colored areas in the map in which materials are delivered in person to each housing unit, again, for response by internet, mail, or telephone. I say telephone. There'll be telephone information on the census form. That people will be able to call a number, and I believe through that number they'll be able to be counted that way. And the Census Bureau has been pushing that they will have response options by internet, mail, or telephone. So the Census Bureau will follow up on units that they don't receive a response from, just like for the self-response areas. Update leave areas cover many households along Alaska's road system that don't receive their mail at home. We have a lot of these when we think about the road system, the highways up to Fairbanks, the entire rail belt. These are all areas that are outside of sort of the regular get my mail at home areas. These are all places that may just get their forms in the mail and be asked to respond. The third type of enumeration area is light-colored green. You see it in Southeast, in which Census Bureau enumerators verify the location of each housing unit and knock on doors to conduct interviews. Many parts of rural Southeast and also Kodiak Island Borough update enumerate areas. And then finally, this most of our state is covered by the remote Alaska enumeration, physically most of our state. This is the darker green areas, which is similar to the update enumerate, except that the Census Bureau enumerators will also work is also validated by a sworn-in local official. The process allows village leaders in these areas to review and certify the counts. The remote Alaska count will begin in January 2020. So January 20 in Tuxhook Bay, that'll be the first count, and that'll be in January. And across the entire country, it'll be the first count. And the regular census operations for most populations won't start until a couple months later than that. And then I want to talk also about people living in military installations and aboard military vessels. They'll be counted through administrative records from the Defense Manpower Data Center. Populations in group quarters facilities. These are like shared living facilities, dormitories, prison cells. They'll be contacted in advance, and the facility will be contacted and counted by a mix of infield visits and also administrative data. And populations at identified transitory locations, they'll be identified and counted by infield visits on a certain day. So turning now to timing. On this slide, it's a recent operational timeline from the Census Bureau, but work by the Bureau on the 2020 Census is, of course, well underway. Really, it started as soon as the 2010 Census was complete. One very important aspect of this work, and I think especially so for the self-response areas and really for understanding the census, is to build its data on residential addresses and locations that they have to connect with across the country to count everyone. To have a complete census with everyone counted once, only once, and in the right, that's the phrase they use, once, only once, and in the right place. That's what they want to do. That's what they want to accomplish. Everyone must be counted at a certain place to do this. The Census Bureau works to accomplish it by a number of different programs. At the very start, they have the data from the last census, and they continually update and improve that data with information from sources including the United States Postal Service, local and state government partners, and Census Bureau field representatives who are working on ongoing surveys like the American Community Survey. Once they receive address data, it becomes what they call Title 13 protected, meaning it is confidential data, and it is not shared for any reason. I'll give some more information on this from the Census Bureau with my next slide. The Census Bureau also has a major address canvassing operation. This is where, in addition to all these things that they did to try and update their information on who they need to reach, where they need to reach, they also go out and physically, in office, they hire workers to review, validate, and update their entire address database ahead of the censuses. In past censuses, 100% of the country was canvassed by people in the field, people walking and checking housing units all across the country. This is called infield canvassing, and it's scheduled to begin in August of this year. But for the 2020 census, many of the nation's self-response areas are being canvassed with data the Census Bureau has in office. So this includes analysis of remote imagery. We've been working with the Census Bureau, and we're very grateful for the partnership with the Alaska Census Working Group to be heard so that the Census Bureau knows that we need people for most of our state, even for most of those tiny little violet and purple colored and tan colored areas. We need folks in the field helping find addresses.
Mr. Hunsinger, when does the federal government start hiring and training the enumerators, and how many do they hire for the state of Alaska and range of pay?
Senator Bishop, I'll have to get the timeline because there's different phases of employment. The first workers will be going into the field to do address canvassing in August, but there are people already being trained. They're already doing hiring for outreach partnerships, and I'll get dates on when the actual numbers of people and also the timing of the numbers of people will happen.
Thank you.
So some important points in this timeline I wanted to point out. January 2020, again, that's the start of the enumeration in remote Alaska and across the country. And then March 2020 is when the update leave operations begin. That's the folks who are probably receive their mail through a post office box or something like that. I think of, the road system going through the Mat-Su Valley and Kenai Peninsula and Fairbanks. They'll start to get forms in March 2020 to respond by mail or telephone or internet. Then April 2020, that's the official census day. That's the one that you'll see it on the form. What was your place of residence on April 1? It's sort of a reference date We have July 1 population estimates. That's sort of our reference date for the population data. So, and the next one is May 2020. That's when that expensive non-response follow-up begins that we want to try and limit, not because of the expense, but because it's indicating we might not be getting everybody. We want everybody to be counted on that first pass and make sure that we count everybody to get accurate numbers. Not too high, not too low, accurate numbers is what we want, what I want for population estimates. So data protection and privacy is something the Census Bureau especially emphasizes, and I think it's important to share some information on it here today. The Census Bureau notes that under Title 13 of the U.S. Code, the Census Bureau cannot release any information about individuals, households, businesses, even to law enforcement agencies. The law states, and I'm quoting here, the law states the information collected may only be used for statistical purposes and no other purpose. To support historical research, Title 44 of the U.S. Code allows National Archives and Records Administration to release census data only after 72 years. All Census Bureau staff take a lifetime oath to protect your personal information. This is a quote from the Census Bureau. All Census Bureau staff take a lifetime oath to protect your personal information, and any violation comes with a penalty of up to $250,000 and or up to 5 years in prison. I share that because I think it's important that we understand where the Census Bureau is coming from as far as data confidentiality. In my experiences, they've always taken it very seriously.
Question? Senator Birch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As far as other access to information without attribution to a specific, constituent data, resident, when does that become available? In other words, not attributed, but if they want to look at Anchorage and find out what, I can't imagine what it is, but maybe for some commercial purpose, for one reason or another, without attribution to an individual. When does that data set become accessible to the public or otherwise?
Through the chair, there's a number of sort of suites of products. They call them summary files. The Census Bureau puts out these list of summary files that they'll provide, all the different tabulations of data, all the different ways that you can cross-tabulate the information, age by race, by whether there's someone or relationship to householder. Sort of basic info. There's not a lot of information that on the decennial census form, but they'll there's a summary file where they list all the different tabulations they make. They are very careful, though. Going forward, they're looking a lot at concern about if people can take a tabulation and somehow link that to an individual and find out information about that individual using advanced technologies. That's something that they're concerned about, and we've been in contact with them about, because we also need data by demographic characteristics for all of our villages in Alaska, but our villages and small communities are quite small, and so we want their data to be protected, but we also hope that the Census Bureau can find ways to ensure that we receive the data that we need to run programs and provide data for Alaskans.
Follow-up, Senator Burke.
So that's basically, as soon as you get that information, it's available, within.
I'm sorry. Yes, through the chair. I didn't answer that question. So the data, I'll have to get the timeline, but the first data comes out right at the turn of 2021, and then it's a couple of years rollout where they're sending new products.
Okay, and it seems to me I get your point. I mean, if you're counting, first count is Tuksuk Bay, and you can get a breakout by the number of people that are over, say, age 90 or whatever. You can probably, in a smaller community, it's probably pretty easy to figure out, how drill down and figure that out.
Yes, and through the chair, that's something that the Census Bureau is taking very seriously right now. It's a big topic of debate, and it's sort of an interesting thing, actually. So, most welcome. Here we are. So this is my last slide here. So just looking forward now, some things that I'm concerned about for the 2020 census in Alaska: any impediments to hiring and training 2020 census employees, difficulty in finding and identifying housing units in Alaska. We have a lot of cabins in Alaska. We have, if there's folks who are multiple families living in one under one roof, this can be a challenge. So something that I hope is managed by strong hiring of people in the field and also by outreach through post office boxes make sure even if they don't find the housing unit, they find the person, and that person can contact the Census Bureau. Multifamily, including individuals living with another family and extended family living arrangements, is something of concern, making sure everyone in the household is counted. We have many multifamily housing units in Alaska. Distrust or fatigue related to the census or surveys in general, and then communication challenges due to language barriers. For all areas in the state, to ensure a complete count, I think it's critical that we find ways to engage with Alaskans to respond and be counted. The Census Bureau has provided careful research on what they call barriers, attitudes, and motivators for response to the census. It's not Alaska specific at all, but I think it's informative. So from their survey, they did a survey of about 50,000 people across in certain places. Many people were unfamiliar with the census, only 33% being very or extremely familiar with the census. Knowledge about purpose and process of the census, it was uneven across different groups. The analysis revealed five barriers that might prevent people from participating in the census, and I do think it's relevant for Alaska, is that concerns about data privacy and confidentiality, fear of repercussions, distrust in all levels of government, feeling that it doesn't matter if you're counted, and belief that completing the census might not benefit you personally. Funding for public services was a top motivator across groups, yet less than half of respondents knew that the census is used to determine community funding. So on the sort of looking at ways to get people to count, they also did research with focus groups, and tying participation in the census to community funding, and by extension, the hope for a better future for younger generations, it was a key motivator to get people to respond. Helping people understand the purpose and content and process of the census may increase participation in the 2020 census. These are all things that the direct quotes from what the Census Bureau found. Messaging is needed for how census directly benefits local communities now and in the future. Providing information about the Census Bureau's data protection policies will not alone mitigate concerns around privacy and confidentiality. Encouraging response from trusted voices within the community may increase participation among people with the greatest distrust in government. So those are some different things that the Census Bureau has seen are barriers to people responding, and when people don't respond, there's a better chance they won't be counted, and things that the Census Bureau, insights from the Census Bureau on how to maybe reach out to people, to work through trusted community, folks from the communities, and so get folks to know about how the census affects their community. So thank you, and here's my contact information.
Mr. Hunsinger, thank you. And next we'll go to our next presenter. Ms. Lori, how are you today? And take it away.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Bishop and members of the Senate Community and Regional Affairs Committee for giving us the opportunity to talk with you about census today and ensuring a fair and accurate count across Alaska. As I mentioned before, I'm Lori Wolf. I'm the president and CEO of the 4-Acre Group. And central to our work is to give voice to nonpartisan public policy issues that impact the nonprofit sector. And of course, we've heard the 3.2 billion reasons why we should care about this topic. And from our economic impact information, we know about 17% of that money goes directly to nonprofits. So we have a whole bunch of reasons why we're interested in making sure that Alaskans get a full and accurate count. So to that end, a little over 2 years ago, the 4-Acre Group convened, created and convened the Alaska Census Working Group. We're an all-volunteer group of folks who are coming together to advocate for the fair and accurate count of Alaskans in the 2020 census. This is a nonpartisan, multi-sector collaboration with representation from local and statewide business, local and statewide government, and also the federal government, also Alaska Native organizations, the University of Alaska, and so many others. And we're all interested in building, influencing and building awareness among policymakers about this important issue. And again, so we only get every 10 years to get this right. So, and these two factors, as we've heard, impact federal dollars and the data, federal dollars based on good data. So we have to get this count right. The impacts are just too great. So I have the task of just giving you a little bit of a recap about some of the things that we've heard today. So you've heard that the federal government has made fewer resources available than we believe are needed for an accurate count to take place here in Alaska. There will be far fewer staff on the ground to help conduct this count. The Census Bureau's outreach efforts are lagging far behind the timeline we think is necessary to build awareness for the census and to encourage Alaskans to participate. There will be no outreach to Alaskans whose only address is a post office box, as the unlike in 2010. And during that census, early notice was delivered to every Alaska post office box to alert people that the census was coming and to encourage their participation. And that will not happen in 2020. There will be no federal dollars set aside for translation of census materials into any of our Alaska Native languages or many of the other languages that we talked about. The Seattle Regional Office, which in charge of Alaska in 2010, is now been relocated to Los Angeles, and that is where our central decisions are being made. There is a much greater expectations that Alaskans will be able to respond online, and we all know the realities of that here in Alaska, and we know the challenge for connectivity or even access to the internet. We also know that people need to feel safe in order to fill out their census form, and we've talked about the challenges there, just trust in government, but also these issues around privacy and technology. We simply risk not having a good data to access Alaska's fair share of federal funds and no data to make solid business decisions for all of Alaskans. Indeed, the U.S. Census Bureau has people on the ground, and we've met many of them, and they're fabulous people, and they're doing their highest level of work, and we appreciate that. And we understand the Bureau plans to hire many more people, and we're doing all of that we can to support that effort. And we also, of course, trying to recruit local leaders and networks to identify as many of those workers as they can. They're also working with local communities and tribes to constitute complete count committees that are focused on ensuring a good count. And that will help build trust. Yes, to the chair.
Senator Costello.
Oh, thank you. I didn't mean to interrupt your presentation.
That's fine. No,
but I know where you're going with the question.
Okay.
You do.
Let's hear it.
So when we met in my office, you had mentioned that there was a budget item of $250,000 you were hoping to have, and I actually had a conversation with Donna Ardwin about that funding, and she had mentioned that it'll be absorbed into the governor's office budget. Have you had any confirmation that actually will be dedicated towards outreach efforts?
No, we have not.
So she surprised me. She didn't go where I thought. We had this conversation. But we're talking about trust in government, yeah. And getting a complete count, is it safe to say these are Alaskans that are training for these federal jobs? Am I right or wrong?
On the ground. Mr. Chairman, I believe it's a combination. On the ground should be Alaskans. But the Census Bureau is doing the hiring and recruiting. They could speak more directly to that.
And we'll have them before us in the future, so we'll get to ask that question of them.
We do understand that they are forming complete count committees locally, and those will be Alaskans, and that's wonderful. We applaud that effort. So what does all of this mean for Alaskans? It means that we have to take action together. I mean, right now, you've got some nonprofits we're doing our part here, but we need to work together. So the Alaska Census Working Group is ready to stand with you to build awareness among other policymakers at all levels of government and in our communities of the importance of a fair and accurate count. In the last administration, we encouraged the creation of the Alaska Complete Count Commission through administrative order. We also helped foster alignment between the body and the working group to ensure assure substantial outreach and the marshaling of state resources to support focused census work. The Alaska Complete Count Commission was recently decommissioned and then recommissioned by Governor Dunleavy through a new administrative order just 2 weeks ago.
So on that point, excuse
mm-hmm.
me,
yes.
In your members' packets, I have included both Governor Walker's AO Order 301 and then the new AO Order 303. So for your review in the package. And if you got a moment, have you had a chance to dive into both of those? And what's the two biggest differences between the two AO orders?
Mr. Chairman, so we have dived into it. We've looked at it carefully. There are 9 ways that it is different. If you want the kind of the two, I'll mention the kind of a top two would be that it removes the connection to the Alaska Census Working Group, and it removes assigned seats from the House and the Senate.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. So in addition to that, we do look forward to the new, to the Complete Count Commission being activated and energized and for its focus to be on a full and accurate count for in 2020. As Senator Costello noted, we also were able initially to secure that initial line item in the budget for $250,000 to support the work of the Complete Count Commission. And we were fairly distressed to see that, to see even that woefully inadequate funding option cut from the governor's recent proposed budget. There is a recent national study that found that a bare minimum allocation to support the necessary outreach in Alaska would be closer to $1.5 million. So even the $250,000, so your information is new for us, but we have not been notified about that. So it's important to reiterate that success for all, that there's success for all of us in a full count, not in what happens to the numbers. There will be many things that are done with the census count. What we care about is getting the count right in the first place. And so we'd like to encourage all members of the Senate and the House to educate your constituents on the importance of a count in your districts. Our data can certainly help with that. And you've heard from two of our colleagues here. We all stand ready to support your efforts. And we encourage the state to bring together resources to help get the word out. If we look at to the strategies employed in the 2010 census, there is much each of you can do to encourage participation. You can include activities that are low or no cost, like sending messages to your constituents or talking about the issues in your own town halls, or encouraging participation through a notice in the PFD application. And I'm sure each of you have wonderful ideas about how you can effectively communicate the importance of the census to your constituencies, and we strongly encourage you to do that. Many of them won't cost you anything except the time to do that. And so we also have plans. The Alaska Census Working Group has, we have a comprehensive budget that'll take us through 2020. We're talking about kind of where can we add the most value and how can we help mobilize and be a complement to your work. We think we need a comprehensive communication campaign really focused on the hardest to count parts of our state. We're going to use all of our resources, including social media and public broadcasting and our small post office box outreach. We'll work on translation of census materials, we hope, into our Alaska Native languages. We hope to offer a mini grant program to help local communities do their own outreach. We have lots of ideas, but we cannot do it alone. So to be clear, we want to be your partner in this, and we need the state to step up and do your part. There is so much at stake for all of us. 3.2 billion reasons every year why we should care about this. And I invite all of you to participate with us, and I strongly encourage you to help encourage the standing up of the Alaska Complete Count Commission to focus on a fair and accurate count for all Alaskans. Thank you.
Very good. Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't have a question, but I just want to tell you how much I appreciate this presentation, the one before at the Lunch and Learn, and this now, because I would say, I mean, I don't know what the percentage is, but I know there are a lot of our citizens throughout the country who have no idea what the census is all about. And so I took a note right now and wrote down how I'm going to educate my constituents, and that $3.2 billion number is really a big deal. So thank you so much for your presentation. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Costello?
Thank you, and thank you, Lori, and panelists. I think what would be helpful is to be able to show our constituents what an envelope is going to look like when it comes from the census, and very similar to, I think, Senator Hoffman's question about what is it going to look like. And then do you have a graphic or just some simple design graphic that we can put in our newsletters and things so that, you start to market that brand, what it looks like?
So through the chair, one of the goals that we have is to actually create this statewide campaign and brand it. We were waiting for the census to give us their own branding, but it's just not going to come fast enough. So we're hoping to actually create, much like Michigan, my counterpart in Michigan have stood up a website for that state with a theme and a brand and the logos and the whole thing, and lots of materials with templates that people can use. And it is our hope to create all of that with you for Alaska. So stay tuned. I don't have it for you yet, but we're coming. in terms of the forums and things like that, I'll refer to my colleagues here. And I think we're going to have to ask our friends from the Census Bureau for examples of those materials, because we have not seen them yet either.
Marvelous presentation from all of you. Any closing comments?
Oh, through the chair, I was just going to add that we were trying to prioritize some of our communications planning and budgeting. And the first thing that we were thinking of is creating this sort of set of templates that legislators or local communities could then personalize and distribute. And so that, and what the work that we're doing most immediately is trying to figure out getting those materials. So that's definitely top of mind.
Thank you. Any other questions from committee members? Seeing none, I want to thank you all for coming. It's great information. And like I said, we will be stay tuned, because we might want to do a follow-up wrap-up towards in this session. Definitely want to have our federal counterpart here at the table with us. And this will conclude today's meeting. We do not have anything scheduled for this Thursday. Committee members, I appreciate you taking the time to stay here today. This meeting is now going to be adjourned at 4:44. We're adjourned.